Welcome to the second hour's reading of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
MCHBCBS of Texas continue negotiating. Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas and Medical Center Hospital have extended their contracts 1 month to hammer out a deal that will keep MCH in network with the insurance providers. Earlier this month, BCBS of Texas Director of Communications, James T. Campbell, said if the two entities weren't able to sign new contracts as of May the 31st, MCH would leave the network. Campbell said the hospital was asking for price increases, but those increases weren't in the best interests of PCBS members and Odessa businesses. MCH officials, however, said the amount BCBS of Texas pays MCH is the lowest in the region. On Tuesday evening, MCH Director of Public Relations, Trevor Tankersley, announced in a news release the hospital had extended its contract with BCBS through June the 30th to allow additional time for our two organizations to finalize negotiations. Tankersley said the two sides had made substantial progress in reaching new agreements that put patients first and reflect the exceptional care our nurses and providers deliver every day. We are confident we can achieve a new long-term contract with Blue Cross and Blue Shield of Texas soon to ensure patients can continue in-network access to Medical Center Hospital, MCH outpatient clinics, and ProCare physicians, Tankersley said. OC summer camps kick off in June. Running the gamut from sports and journaling to scrapbooking and zombie preparedness, Odessa's college summer camps are set to kick off June 5th and be offered through August the 4th. Director of Community Recreation Christine Williams said they will have the regular sports activities like tennis, archery, golf, volleyball, and soccer. They will also have camps at the Fab Lab, virtual reality, nuts, bolts and thingamajigs, and bullet journaling. Scrapbooking is a new camp suggested by the kids, and there will be a chess 101 camp starting with the beginner levels, and if the campers like it, they will add on advanced levels. This will be for ages 8 to 12 years old, Williams said. Astronomy 101 and the science of astronomy will be available. Astronomy 101 is geared toward the younger kids, and the science of astronomy is going to be aimed at the older ones, so the students will learn more about the science of it. Snack Attack is back, finally. I'm super pumped about this one. We're collaborating with Culinary Arts again. We haven't had this camp since pre-pandemic. I'm so excited that this one is back on, and we're also adding a dessert decorating camp with Culinary Arts as well. We'll have multiple camps over there, Williams said. The Snack Attack and Dessert Camp will be held in the Culinary Arts area at OC, so the students will work with professional equipment and chefs. I've been wanting to do a dessert decorating camp, teaching kids how to decorate cupcakes and cakes, and learning the difference between a buttercream and a royal icing, Williams said. Overall, she added, there are 17 different types of camps with multiple times that they will be held. Williams said they have 3 different archery camps, 5 tennis camps, and 4 sessions of Camp Runamuckus, an all-sports camp. They can choose to do a morning session, an afternoon session, or both for Camp Runamuckus. During Camp Runamuckus, campers will stay active all day, learning a variety of sports, going on field trips, and learning laser tag. Every day ends with a swim in the indoor pool. The teachers and staff are mainly Ector County ISD staff. Because there are more camps, Williams had to hire more staff than ever before because she wants to make sure that there are enough eyes on them and the campers stay as safe as possible. All the staff goes through multiple trainings, certification, and background checks. The training includes such as CPR and child abuse recognition from Harmony Home and general training, reviewing the programs, where all the equipment is, and making sure they are ready to go, Williams said. This is the most camps that we've ever hosted. I think it's going to be fun. We're just trying to get all of our last-minute details squared away, Williams said. The age range for the camps is 5 years old through high school, but 5-year-olds can join the tennis camps. For the other camps, the youngest children are 6. Camp Ruckamuckus is for 6 to 12-year-olds. Archery is for 9 to 12-year-olds. The Fab Lab camps are for middle to high school students. We're trying to have a bigger range of camps for all K through 12. I'm actually pretty happy with our lineup this summer. I'm excited, Williams said. It's a lot of fun when the kids get to campus and they get to run around from camp to camp and see what they're doing. I want the kids to have fun with us this summer. I want them to stay engaged, meet new friends. They don't always get to meet kids from outside their school, so it's just a great time to come, have fun, and learn something new. Hopefully, we have 800 kids. That's going to be amazing, Williams said. Planning the camps takes a long time. She starts asking people if they'll come back after summer is over. After the first of the year, she starts putting a calendar together, seeing when people have vacations and when facilities are open and other items. We start ordering equipment early just to make sure it's all here in time, Williams said. Missing teacher found. Brittany Sawyer, the Nemitz Middle School teacher, last seen April the 30th, has been found safe, according to the Odessa Police Department. The OPD did not release any further information. In his media call last week, Ector County ISD Superintendent Scott Murray said Sawyer gave materials such as laptops, ID, and other district-owned items to her landlord, who turned them into the district at Sawyer's request. We are deeply concerned because this would not be normal behavior, he said May the 24th. ECISD conducted a welfare check of the address that the district had for Sawyer. She was not in the home, and it was clear the home had been vacated. 3 local men killed in 2 separate crashes. 3 local residents were killed in separate accidents on Permian Basin roads in recent days. According to the Texas Department of Public Safety, Midland resident Antonio Garcia, 56, was driving south on U.S. 87 in Howard County Monday when a tire on his tractor trailer blew out around 1 p.m., causing the vehicle to veer off the road onto a south entrance ramp at mile marker 383. The tractor trailer rolled, and both Garcia and his passenger, John Linden Brightman, 63, of Odessa, were thrown from the vehicle. According to DPS, neither had been wearing their seatbelts, and Garcia was pronounced deceased at Scenic Mountain Medical Center in Big Spring, and Brightman was pronounced dead at Midland Memorial Hospital. On Tuesday, Odessa resident Jesus Alva Fuentes, 46, was traveling east on Interstate Highway 20 when his Dodge van veered off the roadway into a South Barrow ditch around 8:30 a.m., 3 miles east of Barstow in Ward County. The van then hit a concrete overpass pillar. Alva Fuentes was pronounced dead at the scene. It is unknown if he was wearing a seatbelt, a DPS said. Crescent Park Baptist to host Vacation Bible School. Crescent Park Baptist Church, 3002 East University Boulevard, is having their annual Vacation Bible School, Twists and Turns, from June the 12th to the 16th. Rally starts at 9 a.m. Sign up is available every day at 8:45 a.m. Kids will enjoy learning about Jesus and Peter, mission studies, recreation, craft, and music class. Call 432-366-4476 for more information.
Good day. This is Glenn. I'm going to be reading today for the Midland Reporter Telegram for Tuesday, May 30th, 2023. Front page. Where's the great American pay raise? Midland, by Alex Tanzi. U.S. weekly wages fell in 2022, according to new Bureau of Labor Statistics figures, revealing widespread softness that wasn't previously evident in other data. Average weekly wages were $1,385 in the fourth quarter of last year, a rare 2.3% decline from the same period in 2021, the latest results from the Quarterly Census of Employment and Wages, published Wednesday, showed. The 2022 drop followed a 5.9% increase the year before. The QCEW figures differ from other government measures of wages in that they include things like bonuses, stock options, and severance pay. They're also used to revise more timely, high-frequency measures like those included in the monthly jobs report published by the BLS. Last year's drop probably reflects smaller incentive pay amid a softening in hiring trends, according to Ron Hetrick, an economist at Lightcast. In 2021, companies in all kinds of industries were offering unusual perks to attract workers as they scrambled to staff up again when the economy reopened after COVID lockdowns. Employers have pulled back on the bonuses that they're offering as the labor market has cooled, Hetrick said. That includes everything from hiring bonuses to retention bonuses to inflation bonuses. The QCEW measure provides a different perspective on the state of the labor market than the average weekly earnings figures published in the monthly jobs report, which showed a 4.2% increase in 2022. The differences in the types of compensation included in each mean the two are not directly comparable. It also played a role in the weak figures on gross domestic income published Thursday, with wages and salaries now estimated to have increased $53 billion in the fourth quarter, a downward revision of $135.4 billion after accounting for the QCEW data, the Bureau of Economic Analysis said. Wage decreases were relatively widespread across the U.S., according to the QCEW data, with 240 of the largest 355 counties seeing declines. The report also contained several clues that a shift in the composition of the workforce, with higher-paying industries shedding jobs while hiring in lower-paying industries, remained robust, helped put downward pressure on overall wages. San Francisco, for example, registered a 22.6% drop in average weekly wages, the biggest decline among the 355 largest counties, as professional and business services wages fell 24.9%. New York County saw wages fall 9.4% with a 14.9% pay decline in finance. We are seeing that demand for workers is slowing down in tech and in other white-collar sectors, while it still remains a hot labor market for some of these other industries like food services and healthcare, said Daniel Zhao, an economist at Glassdoor. One bright spot was Midland, which saw average weekly wages rise 6.1%, the biggest increase among the 355 largest counties. The natural resources and mining sector in Midland registered a 3.3% wage increase. A surge in oil prices in 2022 spurred increased drilling activity in and around Midland, which sits atop the country's largest oil basin. Energy companies have scrambled to find workers, boosting pay and helping drive down the area's unemployment rate. The QCEW also contained new information on employment. It showed a 2.6% increase in headcount across the country in 2022, about a half a percent point lower than the employment growth registered in monthly jobs reports. Gains were concentrated in the South, with Midland seeing the biggest rise in headcount, up 7.9%. Other counties in Texas and in Florida rounded out the top five. Elkhart, Indiana, known as the world's recreational vehicle manufacturing capital, and Hendricks, Indiana, saw the largest decreases in employment, with headcount down 1.7% in each county. Chevron hosts tours of Methane Mitigation Center, by Mella McEwen. Efforts by Permian Basin oil and gas operators to mitigate methane emissions are taking the global stage as many countries seek ways to mitigate their own emissions. The Permian Basin was the site of a recent visit by a reverse trade mission on advanced technologies for methane abatement sponsored by the U.S. Trade and Development Agency. Delegates representing of 15 high-level public and or private sector representatives from the oil and gas sectors of participant countries in the Middle East and North Africa visited Washington, D.C., Midland, Odessa, and Houston. They were joined by representatives from the U.S. Foreign Commercial Service. Chevron hosted the delegation at both its Midland and Houston locations. "We toured our Integrated Operations Control Center here in our Midland office," recounted Ryder Booth, vice president of Chevron's Mid-Continent business unit. "The center allows staff to monitor Chevron's Permian Basin facilities in real time, and they can be instantaneously alerted to any challenges." The visitors also viewed Chevron's real-time autonomous optimizer, a digital operating system that can address challenges like water levels that exceed set levels or if flares begin, reduce gas flows until the flares are out. Booth said this technology has resulted in an 80% reduction in flaring since its installation. Chevron also took them to the GBG North centralized tank battery, which includes vapor recovery units, VRUs, and sensors installed by Project Canary to monitor for methane emissions. Booth said that the company also highlighted for the visitors its LDAR, leak detection and repair, use, including cameras and flyovers done in partnership with Bridger Photonics. "We do believe in the importance of collaboration in methane management," said Vanessa Ryan, Chevron's methane reduction manager and chair of the American Petroleum Institute Environmental Partnership. "We've learned a lot in the Permian Basin and share our best practices. We've also learned a lot from other companies." She added that Chevron, with a global presence, has shared best practices learned in the Permian Basin across its global operations and now is sharing them outside its global footprint. "Our goal is simple, keeping methane in the pipeline," she said. "The way we do that in the Permian Basin is with our factory design. That design includes VRUs at tank batteries to ensure as much gas goes into the sales line as possible and utilizing equipment with compressed air instead of pneumatics." She noted that the company is also working with Project Astra, a collaboration between several oil and gas operators and the University of Texas at Austin, to establish a sensor network that will provide near-continuous monitoring across Permian Basin oil and gas facilities and share data and data analytics. Both Booth and Ryan say they are proud of both Chevron's accomplishments in reducing its methane emissions and the Permian Basin's work in reducing methane emissions. Booth emphasized the Permian Basin is home to the world's largest carbon basins. "I believe the future of energy is lower carbon, and we are committed to not only meeting demand for energy, but for lower carbon energy," Booth said. "The objective of this RTM is to showcase U.S. state-of-the-art advanced methane detection, monitoring, and measurement technologies, emissions control and reduction processes such as leak detection and repair, advanced methane capture and repurposing technologies, including venting and flaring abatement, advanced methane tracking technologies, enhanced policies, regulations, and best practices." Sources: Ryder Booth, Vice President of Chevron's Mid-Continent Business Unit, and Vanessa Ryan, Chevron's Methane Reduction Manager. Report: The Garlic Press closes. Midland Reporter-Telegram. The Garlic Press restaurant on Wadley Avenue is closed, according to a report from the Maybe in Midland, Odessa Facebook page. Maybe in Midland, Odessa reported the following: "Now closed in Midland, The Garlic Press." The post then states, "Confirmed from several sources that The Garlic Press in Midland has closed its doors after 24 years of serving Midland. There is no information about a closure on the Garlic Press website, thegarlicpress.net. The Garlic Press is located at 2200 West Wadley Avenue, Suite Number 6. Coterra Energy MSW Open a Sound Garden by Morgan Taylor Thomas. The Museum of the Southwest has opened the new $125,000 sound garden near the Children's Museum, courtesy of Coterra Energy. 25 feet in length and 12 feet high, the interactive creation allows guests to play harmonious tunes in the outdoor area of the museum. Every note sends a vibration through the middle of the structure where guests stand, sending the sound waves through their bones. The Museum of the Southwest has established itself as a beacon of community engagement dedicated to fostering a deep appreciation for arts and culture in the Permian Basin. Coterra Energy is honored to have collaborated with the museum for the past decade, witnessing firsthand its unwavering commitment to building meaningful relationships within the community and among our employees, commented George Stark, Director of External Affairs for Coterra Energy, in a press release. Other donations from Coterra Energy include Coterra Science on a Sphere and Coterra Sundays, which grants free admission to all Sunday visitors. The Sound Garden is open for use, with final touches on landscaping being completed throughout the summer. A ribbon-cutting ceremony will be announced late into the warm season. Museum hours run 10 a.m. to 5 p.m. Tuesday through Saturday and 2 to 5 p.m. Sundays, 1705 West Missouri Avenue. MC Profile, Senegal Native, Studies for Entrepreneurial Career, by Rebecca Bell, Midland College. 20-year-old Senegal native Inde Indor has lived in the United States for 4 years and started taking classes at Midland College in August 2022. "U.S. history is my favorite class," Indor said. "It's amazing how a little group of colonies became the most powerful country in the world." Indor said that she would like to stay in the United States. She is majoring in business administration and wants one day to start her own business. The entrepreneurial spirit is in her genes. Her aunt and uncle currently live in Midland and have a trucking company. "I moved to the United States when I was 16, Indor explained. "At the time, I had family living in New York, so I lived in Queens and graduated from John Adams High School about a year ago. New York was interesting, fun, and a good place to vacation. However, there is a lot of crime. I much prefer the quiet, safe life that Midland has to offer. The winters in Midland are chillier than in Senegal, but not as bad as New York." Even though Endor wants to remain in the United States, she fondly recalls her childhood in Senegal. Senegal is located on the westernmost point of the African continent and is known as the Gateway to Africa, she explained. I grew up in St. Louis, which is the old colonial city near the mouth of the Senegal River. St. Louis was the French capital of Senegal from 1673 until 1902, when the capital was moved to Dakar. It is also close to the island of Goree, which is the location on the Atlantic Ocean where many Africans passed before embarking on wooden slave ships to Europe and the United States between the 16th and 19th centuries. Despite this dark time in history, Senegal is a lovely country. It lies in an ecological boundary where semi-arid grassland, oceanfront, and tropical rainforest converge. This diverse environment has endowed Senegal with a wide variety of plant and animal life. One of the most beautiful places in Senegal is Lake Retba or Lac Rosa, Endor said. It is a natural pink salt lake and one of the richest algae sources in Africa. Its pink hue comes from the algae concentrations. It is also one of the saltiest lakes in the world. Salt farming from the lake is a major industry in the area. Endor also said that religion and beliefs occupy an important place in the daily lives of the people of Senegal. Many denominations of the religion of Islam, the largest faith in the country, are represented. One of my favorite holidays is Eid el-Kabir, or Holiday of the Sacrifice, Endor says. It honors the willingness of Abraham to sacrifice his son Ishmael as an act of obedience to God's command. Before Abraham could sacrifice his son, however, God provided him with a lamb which he was supposed to kill in his son's place because of his willingness to sacrifice his own son in the name of God. In commemoration of this intervention, animals are ritually sacrificed. Part of their meat is consumed by the family, while the rest of the meat is distributed to the poor and the needy. Sweets and gifts are given, and extended family members are typically visited and welcomed. We also wear traditional Senegal clothes on this day. Endor speaks fluent English, which is her third language. She also speaks Wolof, the native language of Senegal. However, all subjects in school are taught in French, so she also considers French as a first language. She learned English as a second language in school. Not only does Endaya speak English, she also writes very well. William Christopher Brown, Midland College English professor and department chair, said, "She is friendly and smart. I enjoyed having her in my class." School in the United States is very different from school in Senegal, Endor said. There were no computers in our school in Senegal. We had to memorize everything. All tests were comprehensive. They tested us on everything we had learned. When I moved to New York to finish high school, I actually found it much easier than Senegal. Endor explained that the opportunities for females to go to college in Senegal are somewhat limited. "I am so thankful for the opportunity to attend Midland College," she said. In addition to being a full-time student, Endor also works approximately 16 hours per week at Chick-fil-A. In her spare time, she enjoys watching movies, especially Bollywood movies, and reading novels in both French and English. Rebecca Bell is the Executive Director of Institutional Advancement at Midland College.
This is the Dear Abby column. Colleague notes, what is really going on at work? Dear Abby, a guy at work, Leon, is my age, very friendly and down to earth. When we've worked together, we have had great conversations, and he has told me a lot about his girlfriend, who he's been with for 4 years. I feel guilty knowing this, because Leon is having an affair with a girl here at work, who's almost a decade his junior, and they've started getting very brazen about it. He tells people he's tempted by her, but would not cross the line. The girl, however, tells very different, detailed, and personal stories about their rendezvous. I'm not friends with Leon on Facebook, but I looked at his profile to read a tribute to his recently lost friend and saw his girlfriend's name, and I'm tempted to reach out. This woman doesn't know me, but I know that at my age, if my boyfriend of 3 years was messing around at work and everybody knew but me, I'd be livid at them almost as much as I would be at him. As someone who has been cheated on before, I feel I have a duty to his girlfriend, because I wouldn't want to waste another second in the dark, or with a cheater. Then again, since Leon and his plaything aren't subtle, do you think I should approach him instead and ask if he's still with his girlfriend, or if she knows about his mistress? I've always thought that honesty was the best policy, and straightforwardness got the most honest answers. Any advice would be much appreciated. Signed, Witness in Virginia. Dear Witness, I understand your impulse to intervene on behalf of Leon's wronged girlfriend, but for your own sake, please resist the urge. If you start a firestorm, your workplace could become unbearable. So, with the understanding that Leon is a cheater and a liar, stay out of it. Dear Abby, my son is preparing to go to basic training. I have been making travel plans to see him graduate, and it is stressing me out. My parents, who have very little money, said they want to go. I rented a house for myself and other family members, but because my parents are bringing their dog, they cannot stay there. There's a no animals rule. So I rented another place for them. When I suggested they bring a crate to keep their dog in while we're away during the events, my mother said she will remain with the dog. My father says he is interested only in the events in the morning and refuses to participate in the town pass with my son because of the expected walking. So now I'll have to make additional plans to take my son to visit them during the few hours he's available during his pass. Furthermore, when I mentioned leaving a few days earlier so we can arrive and not be rushed, my father said he doesn't want to leave any earlier than he has to. I'm at my wit's end. This trip is expensive, and I'm paying most of the expenses for two people who aren't even going to be part of the activities. This trip should be about my son, but I'll need to tend to my parents as well. I don't know what to do. Signed, Proud Dad in Ohio. Dear Dad, your parents' attitude is regrettable. Cancel the reservation for the dog-friendly accommodations and tell them the trip is off. Then go and celebrate with your son's graduation with him and suggest your parents have a belated party for your son when he returns home. If you do, you will save yourself a bundle of aggravation and frustration, not to mention money. You can write to Dear Abby at dearabby.com or P.O. Box 69440, Los Angeles, California, 90069. Her column is distributed by Universal Press Syndicate.
Thank you for joining us for the readings of the Midland Reporter-Telegram and the Odessa American. This is the Recording Library of West Texas, enriching the lives of individuals with physical, visual, and learning disabilities since 1963. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand with your computer or favorite mobile device at recordinglibrary.org.